All right, welcome again to the Effective Communication class. For the next few sessions, we're going to be looking at tools that you can use for communication. And this lecture is about humor, how to use humor to effectively communicate. First of all, Jesus used humor. It's not obvious, but you sort of have to read into the culture. Humor is one of those things that is very cultural sensitive, language sensitive. A lot of times, if you know one language and you learn another, you often don't get the nuances of their humor. And across history, it's difficult to catch on to people's humor as well. So Jesus said this in Matthew 7, verse 4. How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own? Now, I mean, just reading the words, you don't know if everyone laughed, but my guess is they did. I mean, the picture that Jesus has is, you know, I'm nitpicking about something in your life when I have this huge thing. So I have a plank, a board in my eye. And Jesus is creating this exaggerated picture, which is humorous. Luke 6:39, he also told them this parable. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into the pit? So, you know, you picture a blind person trying to lead another blind person. How's that going to go? Matthew 23:24. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat. So you have a bowl of soup, and there's a fly in your soup. And you take the time to get that fly out of the soup. But you swallow a camel. How do you swallow a camel? Kinds of humor. I'm just going to go through a whole list. There's different kinds of humor. There's canned jokes. There's one-liners. There's exaggeration, incongruity, self-deprecating, self-aggrandizing, deadpan. That's where I tell a joke, but I don't laugh. I have a straight face. That's deadpan. Laughter sometimes, if you just laugh, people will laugh. Physical humor, you can do funny things, you can act things out, and it can be funny. Situational humor, this is where you describe something that happened to you. All right, I just want to look at some of these and give you some examples of each one of these so you get the idea. One-liners. These are some one-liners. Worrying works. 90% of the things I worry about never happen. Get it? I like work. It fascinates me. I sit and look at it for hours. Okay, that's incongruity. You think that the person likes work, but in the end it turns out he doesn't do much work. Materialism. Buying things you don't need with money you don't have to impress people that don't matter. So these are one-liners. They're just one sentences that become sort of humorous. You can find many of these things on the internet. Canned jokes. These are jokes that someone has worked out, and you learn them and you memorize them. I'm not very good at these kind of jokes because I can't remember. People will tell me a joke, and a week later I'll have no clue what the joke is. But this is one that I do remember, and this is how it goes. A man joined a monastery, and it was one of those monasteries where you weren't allowed to speak. So you join the monastery, and you don't get to speak. But in this particular monastery, you got to say two words every 10 years. So, this brother Bartholomew joins the monastery, and for 10 years he doesn't get to say anything. So after 10 years, the Monsignor, the head of the monastery, calls him into his office, and he says, Brother Bartholomew, you've been with us for 10 years, what are your two words? And brother Bartholomew looks at the Monsignor and says, food, bad. Monsignor says, okay, well, those are your two words. We'll talk to you again in 10 years. So, 20 years, Brother Bartholomew goes back into the office of the Monsignor. The Monsignor says, well, Brother Bartholomew, you've been with us for 20 years now. It's been another 10 years. What are your two words? Brother Bartholomew looks at the Monsignor and says, bed hard. The Monsignor says, well, thank you, Brother Bartholomew. We'll see you in another 10 years. After 30 years, Brother Bartholomew goes back into the office of the Monsignor. The Monsignor says, well, Brother Bartholomew, it's been another 10 years. You've been with us for 30 years. What do you have to say? And Brother Bartholomew sort of pauses, thinks about what he's going to say, and he looks up at the Monsignor and says, I quit. And the Monsignor looks at Brother Bartholomew and says back to him, well, I'm not surprised. Because all you've been doing for 30 years is complain. I like that one. It's about the only canned joke that I can remember. By the way, it goes well with a sermon on communication. Incongruity. I have a picture that sort of illustrates. I found this particular story on the internet, and supposedly this is the funniest joke in the world, at least on the internet. At least that's what they claim. They did some studies, and this one is funny for some reason. Okay, this is how it goes. Two hunters are out in the woods when one of them collapses. He doesn't seem to be breathing. His eyes are glazed. The other guy whips out his phone and calls the emergency services. He gasps, my friend is dead. What can I do? The operator says, calm down. I can help. First, let's make sure that he's dead. There's silence. Then a shot is heard. Back on the phone, the guy says, okay, now what? Incongruity is you're thinking one thing. Okay, you're thinking the guy's on the phone, you know, what should I do? The operator says, make sure he's really dead. That means you check his vitals to see if there's might be some life, and if there's life, we can maybe do something about it. You're not supposed to shoot him. You're not supposed to make sure. So it's this misunderstanding, this miscommunication, this thing that's, this is impossible. It would never happen. That's incongruity. Exaggeration. I'm so hungry I could eat you. So what's this about? You know the phrase? Perhaps you don't have this phrase, but in the United States, in America, in the English world, we have this phrase, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. Okay, self-deprecating. Self-deprecating is when you put yourself down, that you're sort of the object of the joke. So here's a minister. I'll just use a picture for this one. The title of this week's sermon is, I just spent all week working on a sermon and I got nothing. By the way, this form of humor, at least in my church, works the best. Whenever I poke fun at myself, whenever I say something that I failed at, or I tried to make this happen, and then, you know, it just didn't work out. Remember a couple of years ago, water was coming into our basement through the basement window. There's a well in the basement, you know, in the ground. It's below ground. And the water was filling up this well, and it was coming into the basement. So I got my whole family up, and we're scooping up this water out of this well because it was overflowing through the window, and I was throwing it into the sub pump. And the sub pump is what it's like a pump that takes the groundwater and throws it out and back outside in case it's raining so much. So I was throwing it into the sub pump, and then it would pump it out. And we did it for like an hour, but we were getting nowhere. It was like I kept scooping the water out of this window well and putting in the sump pump, and the sump pump would kick it out, but more water would keep coming into this thing. And we spent an hour trying to do it, and we made no progress whatsoever. I'm wondering, where's this all this water coming from? And finally, I looked outside the little window, and there was a deck above it so you couldn't see, but that sump pump, it had a pipe, and it went up, and then it went outside, and it went outside that deck, and then the pipe went right into this board of the deck, and all it was doing is coming right back into the well that we were trying to empty. So we were just creating a vicious circle. We were taking the water out of here, putting it in the sump pump was putting it out there, and the water was going right back into the well. So when I told that story, my church just roared with laughter. Why? Because it makes me look stupid. And people like it sometimes when a leader fails. Because a leader is talented. A leader is gifted. He's got all these things. He's got all these insights. He knows the Bible. He knows what he's doing. And they like it when the leader fails a little bit, because then you're more like they are, or at least how they feel. Well, what does humor do? I mean, what's the point of humor? And by the way, humor is everywhere. You know, when I go to the airport, or I go to a public place, or I go to the mall, or I go to the store, or I go anywhere, you watch people talking, and within a minute and a half, somebody is laughing. People are laughing all the time. We love humor. Well, what does humor actually do in communication? First of all, it's a commercial. I learned this the hard way. I would preach a sermon, and I have all my points and everything that I want to say, and I noticed people, they would listen, but then I'd sort of lose them. And I tried to figure out what the deal is. But I started analyzing culture. You know, if you read old books, sentences were way longer than they are today. When I went to the Philippines back in the 80s, people would have church services for 3 hours, and people would listen. But here in the United States, people would never listen for that length of time. It's like our attention span is getting shorter, and why is that? Well, part of why it is television. You watch television, or you watch a movie, and, you know, you're watching, and after 15 minutes, all of a sudden a commercial comes on. You're in this drama, and it's very intense, and you're wondering what's going to happen, or there's a sad thing, and you're right in the middle of the story, and all of a sudden, someone comes on, and they're selling toothpaste. Would you like a brighter smile? Then you need to buy this toothpaste. It's like, what? Or we're selling a car, or we're selling some food, or whatever it is. It's right in the middle of our show. This thing is totally unrelated. And then we get back to the show. So people are used to that. They're used to this interruption. It's like they have a breather. You know, we're in this intense thing, and then we relax, and we think about something totally different, and then we get back into it. Well, I realize that people in a sermon need a commercial. Every 10, 15 minutes, probably every 10 minutes. And if you don't give people a commercial, they'll take one. They'll drift off and think about what they want to think about. So I give people a commercial. And what is a commercial? A commercial can be humor. When you tell something humorous, they step back, they go, and they forget about things, and then they can get right back to it. So one use is a commercial. Secondly, it puts people at ease. You tell something humorous. Maybe you're talking about sin, or you're talking about a problem, or you're talking about a thing that requires them to think hard. And then all of a sudden you tell something humorous. Maybe it's a joke about yourself and what you did or didn't do. And people relax. And when people are relaxed, you can sort of come at them from behind the scenes. It connects us to each other. It connects us to our struggle, our common struggle. When I tell a story about things in my life that have broken, you know, I take something apart and then I can't get back together again. And people think that's funny. But it also connects us to the brokenness in our life. That's what our lives are like sometimes too. Our lives get broken and we're having a hard time putting it back together. And you know, one of the things I do when something doesn't work, the first thing I do is kick it. Or I hit it. If the computer isn't working, I hit it a good one. And if it still doesn't work, I hit it again. And if it doesn't work after that, I throw it against the wall. We feel that way sometimes in life. It's funny with a computer. It's not so funny with your kid. But sometimes we do that. We kick it. We kick our spouse. We kick our kids. We kick our boss. We talk about people behind their back. We do things because we're hurt. See, the humor, it gives us an insight into our common struggle. And we can look at it in a light way and then apply it to ourselves in a deep way. It gets past logical defenses. I guess that's what I was just doing. You're just listening to me tell a story about a computer, but then I zing it back on you and I start talking about your parenting with your kids. And maybe that hurts a little bit. Because maybe that's what you do with your kids. But if I came at you and I said, I want to talk about your lousy parenting with your kids, see, now you're defensive. Now you're like, well, I don't think I want to hear about this. But if I start with my computer and then go to your kids, see, I got you with the computer because that wasn't that threatening. But then I apply it to your parenting and see, it happens before you have a chance to get your defense walls up. It's a great contrast to a following serious point. That's what I was just doing. I can make a humorous thing, but then I go to something really serious. Well, how do you find your humor? I mean, humor is one of these difficult... How do you grab hold of humor? What is humor? How do you make something funny? What if you're not funny? And how do you be funny? You know, you memorize jokes. And that's one thing you could do, is go through and find different kinds of jokes for different situations, and you have something ready to go. But a lot of humor is just situational. It's just stuff you say in an interaction. How do you find it? Well, first of all, analyze the things that make you laugh. Start listening to people. When someone starts laughing, or you start laughing, ask yourself, now, why was I laughing? What is funny to me? And analyze what that is. Analyze your natural humor tendencies. I did this a few years ago with myself. I realize I'm not a one-line guy. I'm not a canned joke guy. I'm not really a joke person. I'm a situational humor person. I find humor in the situation or in my response to people, especially when we're talking about something. I find my humor in poking at myself. Sometimes I find humor in poking at others a little bit. Although you have to be careful with that one. You have to know people well enough or they think you're really poking them. Use what works for you. Okay? You know, I heard some pastors that were really good with one-liners. They were good at jokes. And I tried to use their jokes. And it sort of worked. Because it's just not me. So I had to find what, you know, this is the kind of thing that works for me. Okay, so on the one hand, find the humor that works for you. But on the other hand, work on a kind of humor that doesn't come naturally to you. So I do work at more, you know, telling of jokes and so on and finding jokes. But that's a lot harder for me. I can't remember them. I'll find one, and then I'll forget it. The first sermon that I preached when I planted a church in Vancouver, British Columbia, this is 1988, we did a phone campaign. We made 20,000 phone calls into our community, inviting them to a grand opening service. So it was a lot of work to have this grand opening service, and we had 200 people show up to the first service. And I thought, what am I going to talk about? And so I thought, I want to talk about belonging. Belonging as people of God, belonging to God, belonging to each other, belonging in our marriages and our families. But I was trying to figure out what funny thing that I would say. And I remember, you know, I remember one thing, or I found one thing, and I still remember it. In fact, every year I would tell the same thing. And it's a husband and wife. husband and wife are talking, and the wife is complaining to the husband, because the husband is always saying that he loves his wife. Honey, I love you. 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 And the wife is finally tired of him saying that. She looks at him and she says, you know, you're always saying that you love me. In fact, the husband would say it so intently, with so much intensity. He'd sometimes say, honey, I love you so much, I would actually die for you. I love you so much, I would die for you. And the wife looks back at him and says, you know, you always say it, but you never do it. You never actually die for me. So, that was my little joke. Okay, so I can remember that one. I can remember the one about the Monsignor and the monk and so on. But I can't remember any others. So that's something I have to work at. I have little cards, and then I have them categories, and that requires work for me. Most of my humor just comes. I don't have it prepared. It's just, there it is. All right, examples of sermon humor. And the only reason why I'm going to give you this example is I just did it on Sunday. We're in a series. We're reading through the whole Bible, and we're in the Genesis story of Jacob and Esau. And the kind of humor that I use is more situational. Jacob and Esau, they're twins. They're fighting in the womb. They're fighting as to who's coming out first, because the firstborn gets a double portion of the inheritance, twice as much. So Esau and Jacob are fighting inside. In fact, so much so that their mom goes to God in prayer and says, what's happening to me? And God says, well, there's two nations fighting. The older one will serve the younger one. So then they're born. And it says that Esau came out first, and he was red. And in the old translation, it really means he was strong, he was virile, he was ruddy. And he comes out first. And he's described as a hairy garment. So you got to wonder what this Esau looked like. So he comes out first. And so how I describe it to my congregation is, okay, Esau comes out. He's got a Cabela's camo onesie. He's dressed in camouflage. He's got a cigar in one hand. He's got a gun in the other hand. And he's got a full beard. And he comes out saying, what's happening? That's the kind of guy that Esau is. Now Jacob, they notice that this younger one has a hold of his heel. Right? He's trying to hold, hey, you're not getting out first, I'm getting out first. Right? He's doing all the, but he's weaker. Okay, he's described as a smooth man. He hangs around the tents. He's like pulling. And so they name him Jacob. And Jacob means overreacher. He's trying to get what he doesn't have. Okay? And both of these names describe who they are. Well, the next section. So Jacob comes out. He's a smooth guy. The next thing says Jacob was a smooth guy. Esau was this hairy guy. And by the way, how hairy he must have been when Jacob and his mother were going to fool Isaac, the father who's blind, and Jacob wants to steal the birthright. He's supposed to go in there and pretend he's Esau. And Jacob says to his mom, well, huh, you know, I'm a smooth guy. I mean, Dad's going to touch me and feel me. He's going to know that I'm not Esau. And so what does his mom do? She takes a goat, takes the skin of a goat, and velcros the skin on his arms and his neck. And it works. I mean, Jacob feels this goat hair and goes, oh, that must be my son Esau. I mean, what kind of hairy guy was this? Well, that's kind of humorous, but... All right, the next scene is... it says Jacob was a smooth man, Esau was a hunter, and he's going out there hunting. And so how I make it humorous, I sort of relate it to today. I say, okay, as I'm describing Esau, you know, he's got the camo on, he's got the big beard, he's, you know, he's got the gun and the bow and the thing, and he's out there hunting and so on. And he drives, well, what kind of car? Well, he would drive like a Jeep. You know, with the big tires and, you know, the lift kit. And, he needs a step ladder just to get inside this Jeep. That's the kind of car that Esau would drive. Now, Jacob, Jacob, it says he hangs around the tents. He's more of a Hobby Lobby kind of guy, a crafting kind of guy, likes hanging out with the women and making soup and recipes and things like that. What kind of car would he drive? Now, when I said this, you know, when I asked this question this past Sunday at my church, because I have a Prius. I have a Prius and a Jeep. And when I said, what kind of car does Jacob drive? They all yelled out, Prius. Because they wanted to poke fun at me. But the kind of car I describe Jacob as driving is a cabriolet. A cabriolet is a Volkswagen. It was a convertible. It was kind of this, it was really a chick car, really. And so that's what I said. You know, Jacob would drive a cabriolet. So what I'm doing is I'm taking the Old Testament story, but I'm using some of our contemporary things to paint a picture. And sometimes when you do that, it's humorous. So you can take passages, you can make some humor in describing scenes, you can use humor in how you act some of the scenes out. But humor is a grease. It sort of gets the communication going. It goes underneath the radar, and so that your serious point can be made. So experiment with the humor in your communication.